also want to introduce you to Dr. Renee Clozell, who's the founder and head psychologist of New York-based Child and Family Psychology, joining us now to address something that caught our eye. And it had to do with a teen's letter in the Chicago Tribune. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, I'm very well. I'm like in the heart of child rearing. And this was so funny to me when I read it in the Chicago Tribune. I thought we have to get a professional in to discuss. It was a letter to their, I don't know whether it's their etiquette expert or lifestyle issues. Her name is Amy. It said, "Dear Amy, I'm a freshman in high school. Last year, I often had trouble getting up in the morning, which caused me to miss the school bus multiple times. My parents helped me fix this issue by having me go to bed earlier. This year, I have not missed the bus once and have been getting myself up on time. The problem is this. My parents still won't let me stay up later. They still make me go to bed at 9:45. I'm not tired, and I don't fall asleep at least for another hour. Does this sound familiar? Even after reading. All I ask is I'd be allowed to go to bed at 10:15 after watching TV. My brother has been going to bed past 11 p.m. for years."
way to put parents in a tough situation, huh?
Yes, so she wants her parents to be less draconian and trust her to go to bed at an appropriate time and also be able to get herself up.
Right, and so I always say to parents that, you know, negotiation gets a bad rap. I think that there are times to negotiate and there are times to stand our ground. And, you know, we are the CEOs of our kids. So we have to know when to stand our ground and when to negotiate. I don't always think negotiation is bad, and here's why. When you're negotiating, especially with a teen, when they're at the age of learning independence, kind of flirting with who they are and their own self-identity, they're learning. It's a teaching moment. By negotiating, they can learn affirmations for themselves, how to advocate for themselves, assertiveness. As long as parents are able to set parameters within the negotiation, I say go for it. It doesn't mean she's going to get the later bedtime, but have the conversation.
This is from the child's perspective. From the parent's perspective, what are we to do when they then take advantage of a situation? They still get up on time, but they're up to all hours of the night because you have exhausted all your resources and you ultimately pass out watching Mad Men reruns.
Right. Okay. So that has to be part of the parameters that I think you put in. So it sounds like from this letter, she's only asking, for 10:15. If you know that you're going to go to bed at 10, you might say, all right, we'll give it a shot. On a trial basis, we'll try for a week. And if during that week you're able to do A, B, C, you know, get on the bus on time, make sure all your homework is done. And, you know, another thing you might throw in there is during that extra time, you will not be texting on social media or anything like that. You'll be doing something productive. Try it for a week. And if you don't meet my parameters, then sorry, we go back to the 9:45 bedtime.
I don't know what happens when they so greatly exceed your ability to stay up that you can enforce those rules. I say that because I have an almost 17-year-old. She can stay up till 1, and I think this might be a body clock issue, 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, no problem. I can stay up till about 9:30.
I am in the same boat with you. So I totally understand that. I mean, another thing I think parents can do just to have, you know, a little bit of support is to say, listen, I know just because you can do it, your body and your brain can do it, does not mean it's healthy for your body and your brain. So if you look at the recommendations from the American Academy of Pediatrics, it does give guidelines on how much sleep a child or a teen should have per night.
One per week. And frankly, it replicates what babies get. babies need a lot, and then they need a little less as they grow older, and then they get to be in high school, and they need more.
Well, you know what's really funny? I always tell my parents that I work with that teenagers are very much like two-year-olds.
You don't have to tell me.
Isn't it the truth?
And I'm sorry if I just offended a family member. I do think they're like babies. Like, babies want attention on demand, and teenagers want attention on demand.
Absolutely. I mean, if you pull out those old general psych 101 from freshman year in college and look at what the developmental psychology theorists say, they're going through the same developmental struggles identity, independence, and dealing with authority. They go through it at 2, and they go through it again in their adolescence years. And, you know, another thing, this is my mantra that I say about parents and teenagers, and my mantra that I say over and over and over again when I'm parenting my own kids, when you go in to have a conversation with your kid, with your teenager, say to yourself, parenting a teen is like hugging a porcupine. It just is. And so you cannot go in thinking you're going to have an easy conversation. You need to have your protective gear on, because that is just, and they're not being mean enough, that's just their developmental stage. So you kind of wear that protective gear for the next couple years.
It's a stage. Yes. They grow out of it?
I think when they have kids themselves, they grow out of it. But eventually, yes. The hope is, I mean, we all know adults who act like teens, but the hope is that when we parent in the way we should parent and help them have a healthy dose of independence and boundaries and authority, that yes, they do grow out of that stage, and as adults, we're all trying to reach, you know, a more self-actualized stage, but yes, the plan is that they do grow out of that stage.
We're looking for some other examples. If you've ever dealt with teens and it became a negotiation or a war, or whatever situation you've got going on in your house right now, you should call up and discuss it as part of the community of Living at Home and Martha Stewart Living Radio, because Dr. Renee Clausel is here, founder and head psychologist of the New York-based Child and Family Psychology. You can ask what to do in your very particular situation. If it's not about bedtime, maybe it's about coming home time from when they're out, or it's about study time, or it's about, you know, eating breakfast, because that's another, I don't know, it's taboo, I guess, if you're a teenager to eat breakfast. Is that the case? They don't seem to get up in time to do it. Or simply getting up. You know, this child says she gets up independently. If I had the tenacity to bet on it, I would bet she doesn't. In her head, she probably does, because she didn't miss the bus. I bet in her parents' head, she's like coming close every day.
And you're absolutely right, and that's where parents have to put in parameters. So one of the parameters might be, okay, if I have to come up and get you, that means you have not fulfilled your part of the agreement. If you want to stay up till 10:15, you're setting your alarm independently. You know, the thing is that kids have to show us that they're mature enough to handle the independence they want. And so the way you're going to show me this is you set your alarm on your own, you get up on your own, you shower and eat breakfast on your own. If you can't do those things, you show me you're not mature enough to handle it.
Now, in this example, there's a reward. The reward is she gets to stay up later and she gets to watch TV like her brother. That's my favorite part of the letter to Dear Amy, like
right.
My brother. Because each child has different parameters. I thought you'd treat them all the same, but that actually doesn't work when they become teenagers. Everybody gets something a little bit different addressing their personal needs. I didn't know that. You know, like
yeah.
When you're feeding them carrots. They all get carrots. They get to be different human beings. You treat them a little bit differently. But there's a reward. The reward would be staying up later. I don't know if you read that recent study about, or it was an article in the New York Times about not tying actions to rewards, because that's not life. And I don't know how you feel about that. There was one article, it was really one opinion about action and reward. Clean up your room, we'll run to the store and get a new game, whatever it might be. Help me do this thing around the house, and if you do it every 4 Fridays, then we will go get an ice cream cone.
Right, and so what happens is people are taking that from the basic tenets of behavior therapy, which most people say is the thing to use with kids. And I think what happens is that lay people maybe not using the techniques correctly or taking it a little bit too far. But the thing is that in classic behavior therapy, you might start with rewards, but you wean those rewards off. And you're only using rewards for those kids who need it. So if I'm working, let's say, with a child who has ADHD, I might have to say, if you can stay on task in class for 15 minutes of the lesson, you will get a reward. But would I say the same thing to another child who has no problem staying on task? So parents really have to, you know, decide does their child need a reward. And the goal, the thing here is that you always parent from goals. I always say parenting is a job. We are the CEOs. We have to parent from goals and values. So the ultimate goal is that our children receive intrinsic rewards. And so your child is happy they've cleaned their room because it just feels pretty darn good to be in an organized, clean room, right? So that is the aim. That is the goal we're trying to get to. So you don't keep saying, if you clean your room, I'll give you ice cream. If you clean your room, because they're working for the ice cream and they're not even noticing how good it feels to be in a room. But parents have to take baby steps to get to that point. And I think a lot of parents forget what the ultimate goal is.
Now, is that at any age? Because we used to clean the room just fine, and then something also in the teenage world, it becomes more messy. The room, or whatever the process is.
Yes, well, teenagers,
I mean, can we start over is the big question. It seemed like everything was on track, and then at different benchmarks and different ages, you fall off the track a little bit. Can you get right back on in baby steps, starting from the beginning again?
You know what? Think of it like getting back on the treadmill after you've fallen off your exercise plan. Everybody needs some refresher once in a while, but again, think about the two-year-old and the teenager and how close they are in developmental goals they're trying to achieve. So you might have to go back to your teenager's baby steps, kind of like you are with a two-year-old, and constantly reminding them. Sometimes I think the teenager mind or brain is just so overwhelmed with, you know, who's going out with who's sitting next to you. There's so much going on that from the moment you say, go upstairs and clean your room, till they start walking up the steps and hit the top of the steps, they've forgotten, oh, what was I supposed to do? So sometimes just inputting reminders. One of the goals of teenagers is self-management. We have to teach them how to self-manage, and sometimes that means us just being annoying, but constantly reminding them.
That brings us right full circle, doesn't it, to where we started. As the CEO, I want to thank you. Dr. Renee, how do people find you online if they want more information about what you do with families and with children in particular?
Sure, drreneecorsell.com.
Most excellent. I appreciate you dropping by to help us negotiate a better deal.